Liebe Freunde, heute bei uns als Gast im Rockpalast, Wire.
Called Another the Letter.
This is you, it's called the 15th.
Perfect, yes, I can prove it. Business or pleasure, the more that you
waiting for us. 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 Waiting for us.
Two people in a room.
Two people in a room. Facial movement to describe. Positions are shifted, the ceasefire is lifted, the lighting is fierce, it's intended to pierce any cloak of deceit. My God, they're so gifted, my God, they're so gifted, my God, they're so gifted, my God, they're so gifted.
I've been mysterious today.
Concern.
Always.
When you're feeling quite bright.
Quite.
And your filament burns. I feel mysterious today. Everything is humming loudly. I feel mysterious today. Everything is coming this way. Is it ever appealing to stand on the ceiling?
Watch out!
Observe the tension go. I feel mysterious today. Everything is humming loudly. I feel mysterious today. Everything is coming this way. Going walking abroad. Man's hat before dawn. Bats in profusion now. Mysterious today. Everything is humming loudly. I feel mysterious today. Everything is coming this way. Oh, 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 oh relapse. Anger drunk from every word. Being sucked. Being sucked in a gown. Being sucked. Being sucked in a gown. Being sucked. Being sucked in a gown. Tears still fresh. The gaping mouth of fish was dream. Being sucked.
Oh, being sucked.
Being sucked in a gown. Being sucked.
Oh, being sucked.
Being sucked in a gown. Being sucked.
Oh, being sucked.
Being sucked in a gown.
Being sucked.
That babe was saved. The rules are white. No hand, no step, your life's in vain. Being sucked.
Being sucked.
Being sucked in a gown. Being sucked.
Oh, being sucked.
Being sucked in a gown. Being sucked.
Oh, being sucked.
Being sucked in a gown.
Being sucked.
Thank you.
orphan's eyes to the fatal gift of a well timeline, loved in the flesh and butchered in the mind. Oh, what a pearl, what a well made world. In the mind. Oh, what a pearl, what a well made world.
Oh, what a pearl, what a well made world. Oh, what a pearl, what a well
eternal
made world.
So glad you close.
What a well.
Oh, what a pearl, what a well made world. Oh, what a pearl, what a well made world.
Oh,
K-O.
Institution walks Spaces in between. Thank you. Expanse of geometry.
knows the area where the water flows. So petrified, the landscape grows. Straining eyes try to understand the work incessantly at hand.
Like a heartbeat.
We don't play requests.
Start with one of the difficult questions. We'll save the simple ones for later. Somebody said to me before the concert that your music is for depressive, lonely people, and that's why he didn't like it. I mean, is that fair?
No.
That's a simple one.
Was he
a depressed, lonely person?
No.
That's why he doesn't like it.
Does he know many depressed, lonely people? It's interesting.
But do you find them when you're on stage? I mean, for instance, again, when you came back to do an encore, someone called out a request and you said, dryly, we don't play requests.
But it wasn't dryly, it was accurately. We don't play requests, we never have. And I don't suppose we ever will do. We do what we do as best as we can.
Okay, really?
And we're not a jukebox. That's why, you know, we're here. If people want a jukebox, they go elsewhere.
Does that mean then that you don't make any concessions really to playing before a live audience.
Well, I think the fact that we come
that you're there
is a concession to a live audience.
I knew you were going to be difficult, but
I mean, it's if you talk about concessions to a live audience, I mean, I don't think that it should really operate on that level. I mean, it's not just sort of like a sort of something that, I don't know, you just sit there and you just watch it and you think, oh, that was nice. Or whatever. One hopes that it's sort of in some way provoking, in some way stimulating. Even if it stimulates a negative reaction, that's better than no reaction at all, as they always say.
To go back just for a minute, I mean, to the beginning of the band, now, what was the main reason why you got together at the beginning, back in 76?
I don't think there was a main reason, actually.
Tell me one of the others.
It's clever. It was quite loose, it's quite vague. I think one of the reasons is we're all getting on fairly well with what we're doing individually, but I think maybe we thought that collaborating in some way with other people might be quite interesting. The fact that music is a quite convenient way of doing that.
Mm. And also, I mean, it was sort of like cause and effect. I mean, we didn't really know each other, and we just all, for some reason, and said, well, let's, for some reason, I can't explain why now. I mean, caution was thrown to the wind, and we all decided we were going to make a noise.
I was going to say,
discovered we enjoyed it.
Because the thing was, we didn't even particularly like each other. We didn't know each other, and I don't think we particularly liked what we knew about each other anyway. And when we started, I think it was the fact that we found that we weren't embarrassed to make a noise in the same room, because none of us could play at all.
Apart from Colin.
Colin could play, but he wasn't playing guitar at the time. He was singing, and he couldn't sing.
Can't sing
now.
Yeah. I remember you telling me when I first saw you that one of the main reasons you told me then, I think, that you got together was in fact because at that time what was happening in rock music didn't appeal to you, and you wanted to do something that was, if you like, not typical rock and roll. Which I think you certainly did at the beginning, but do you find now, having done two albums, having been on tour, and done those kind of rock and roll things, that it's still possible to maintain that kind of an attitude where you're not falling into the trap of doing what everyone's doing?
I think it makes one even stronger. Mm.
On one hand, it's an inevitable dichotomy, and on the other hand, you can say, okay, faced with that, right, let's we're in the position to do it and continue it, make it even more so, or make it whatever. And I think probably it becomes more subtle in some ways. I'm not quite sure how we don't sit down and say this is how we're going to cope with it. And it's something which is continually in everyone's minds.
The thing is ways evolve. When you are confronted with it, it becomes very, very, very obvious and quite disgusting, really. The whole thing which goes along with it, but I don't think you can avoid it coming your way, but I think you can sort of fend it off.
In that sense then, how has your attitude towards writing changed? Do you find that having now been in the studio more often that your attitude towards actually composing a song has changed because you now feel that much more at home working in a studio?
I think that's more recording, isn't it, really? That comes down to record. I think your attitude towards writing is remains the same. I think playing, obviously, because you get the instant replay, you can hear what is right and what is wrong, and every time we've been into the studio, I think we've improved considerably because of the intensity of the activity. But on the writing side, I don't think it's changed that much.
In a way though
I think we've sort of come with sort of more formed ideas of what we want.
I think how it works out is, from my side, the things that I write is that I always have things, imagine things going on, you know, this, well, I can imagine this melody counterpoint, etc., 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 and they, while you're just sitting there playing on the guitar, it never will come to fruition unless you actually plonk to the studio. As soon as you think, well, I know that this song, when it is played by people, then it will be recorded, and those ideas will be able to happen. But that doesn't actually mean that more ideas come your way. It just means that it makes what was impossible before possible. So in that way, it's a good thing. But I don't think it actually changes the writing.
I find it interesting too that with your own songs, that most of them have not changed in the arrangements from the way that you used to do them when you first wrote them. And I somehow always felt that, because you're always writing new stuff and experimenting, that maybe you would have changed.
I don't think.
What about Pink Flag?
Pink Flag, I was going to say.
We just went up and wrecked Pink Flag.
I mean, we've just changed. We've been doing, apart from the fact that it had the chorus in the right, in the same place, and that happened to be a C, I don't think it sort of bore that much relationship.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if you think of the things when they're written as being then finished. I mean, you're happy with them in that way.
No, I don't think that's quite. I think there are two points. First of all, that when a song is written, and then it is brought to the rest of the band and say this is how it goes and it gets played, immediately a change occurs. We then usually take it out on the road or demo it. And in that process, something changes. And then again, when we come to recording, something changes. So probably by the time of recording, a song has already been played to quite a large extent, so that we have found a satisfactory way of playing it. It doesn't mean to say that there can't be a certain looseness within the structure, but we do know how to make the best of that melody or how to make the best of that song. So I think something evolves always, because we just have quite a large amount of time between writing and recording.
Let me ask you a general question, because when...
Can I say something before you go on? I was going to say, I think the thing about you saying about, because we sort of change or whatever, I think the fact that we had 9 new songs, I don't think there is a necessity to sort of particularly push things sort of out of the window or over the edge or whatever you want to say, because there were 9 new songs, and you know there were only 8 which people knew, but yeah, that was perhaps their lead into what we're doing now, you know, the new things.
Let me then ask you a general question, because when you began 76, end of 76, beginning of 77, there was a lot going on in England, obviously, that everybody now knows about, and at that time there was a scene, if you like, of things happening. Now, a couple of years on, do you think that perhaps what you were doing at that time has had an influence on people that have come after you? Do you see that happening?
People have said as much, but I don't think we're that
difficult
aware of it.
For us to say that, I think we're making sort of outrageously whatever claims. But I think it is possible that there are people
maybe
who...
Everybody who came out of that time.
I think it's more a matter of not being influenced, of opening doors, doing a certain amount of spade work, certain things. Some a band will do something, and that means that people will be prepared to listen in that period of time to something which is not the same at all, but something which is different. I mean, it's something which happens every now and then. I mean, what happens is eventually that the rock market again closes up again in a very kind of narrow line of what is acceptable, and if someone goes and does something unacceptable in front of an audience, they probably aren't prepared for it.
I think the record companies have done that.
That always happens.
There seemed to be a lull, but now there seem to be more bands around again.
I think things are picking up.
Picking up, yeah.
Very quietly.
Quietly this time. It's not going to be a sort of big push this time, because, you know, somebody's already sworn on TV, you know what I mean? So, you know.
So don't try it. We'll cut that out.
Don't know any swear words.
I don't know any German swear words.
What about the stage show? Because I know that you said about that in a different way to most bands too. Let's take, for instance, the lighting, which is perhaps the most obvious point to start. How did you go about deciding how you'd present yourselves on stage?
I think we knew what we didn't want. We didn't want the rock and roll twinkling lights Christmas tree effect. And this is the part where it goes, and then it goes, and then you change the colour and you have a wash here and a wash there. That's that's for that kind of music, and that's what we were interested in. But when we came to it, Simon, who does our lights, we said to him, we're interested in anything that you have and that you're interested in that isn't rock and roll. And he did some theatre lighting. And we pushed on from there. You know, he'd brought things in. We had an idea for sort of various things, but it's just a dialogue, really.
It's the songs which are lit rather than the
people,
yeah. Hopefully.
Because in rock and roll, the lights flash.
And obviously you have to light the performers, but hopefully the actual song is lit.
I think we talked quite extensively with Simon to start with, but I mean, it became quite apparent that he understood what we were talking about.
Because usually rock and roll thing is the lights all flash and the people all run around in circles, and then it's exciting. And like, we thought, you know, it's pretty naff.
Is that also what determines then, for instance, the way you actually put the set together? Because you end with Heartbeat, which is a very slow, quiet sort of number, apart from the obvious climax in the middle, whereas most rock and roll bands will go out with their big, heavy number.
Go out with the big number. We have had sets in which we have a big number that finishes. We decided on this particular set, the set that we play tonight, is what we're taking out on tour at the moment, and it's it just seemed like a good idea.
And we just talked about it before,
and we'd never played Heartbeat on stage
we'd never play it,
but it's, we had the 9 new songs, and well, the last time we were in Germany we had 7 new songs, and the mood of those was, should we say, quite, it wasn't exactly sort of punchy, was it? And this time the new songs sort of were a little bit more lively, and we just felt that it worked, that it should be, rather than sort of
a reflective kind of end rather than,
but it's, it also sets up, I mean, something that we're always interested in is tension between performer and audience, and I think it's set, when it works, it sets up a magnificent tension. So that a pin, if it works, it doesn't always, a pin could drop. And then,
well, it gives the audience the chance to react in a different way as well. And people,
it's very unexpected.
You know, the few crowds that we have played to seem to enjoy it, rather than having to go mad and leap up and down, sweat a lot.
Let me ask you something and ask Robert to answer it, because
he always picks on me.
We've had this before, Robert. That
you never say anything.
You never say anything. And the last time that we talked, you said it was because no one ever asked you anything. So I'll ask you something direct.
Didn't mean it.
He was lying.
Mike Thorne, who produces the band now and does a lot with you in the studio, obviously wasn't with you tonight on stage. What sort of a role is he playing now? Let's say after you've done the first 2 albums. I mean, do you work closely with him just when you're in the studio, or do you find you work with him outside of the studio anyway?
Well, I have played on stage with him a few times. It's closest when we're in the studio, definitely. But we meet now and then, sort of discuss ideas of what's going to happen next.
I thought that was a very good answer, didn't you? Agree?
Bad.
Applause?
Applause.
I'll run through it again, see if I get it.
Very incredible.
You'd agree with that, though, that, I mean, Mike, the last time we spoke to you, said that he was almost like a fifth member of the band.
I think in the studio it's the case. We obviously, you know, we work quite separately, really, in the way that we're working, until, well, now I suppose even more so, in the sense that it's closer in some senses, because obviously we know each other a lot more than we did. But it's further in other senses, because at one time he did demos with us or whatever, but now we do our own demos, and then the first thing that he hears is a tape when he receives it. And he starts working from his point of view of how he thinks it, should we say, production, or maybe some ideas of arrangement that he has, and other ideas that he has, maybe other people to work with us, maybe on the next album. There perhaps will be, but you know, it's still very much when we go into the studio that the sort of dialogue really.
Well, we do the necessarily preparatory groundwork for an album. When we say, well, we don't meet in a kind of an official kind of circle. I mean, we each know him separately as well, and we might be sitting together and say, well, I think, you know, like, you could do it so and so, so and so. What do you think about this or that?
I don't like your new jumper.
Or whatever. And then, you know, like, an idea will start to form and you can just, you know, think about, well, because some things have to be done ahead if you want to get someone to do something on an album. And you can't just decide, you know, like, 10 weeks into an album, if you were to take 10 weeks over, that you suddenly got to fly in the Berlin Philharmonic or something.
How long do you take over an album normally?
Not very long.
Last one was about 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
First one was 4.
We'll probably take about the same time. We're actually approaching recording the next album in a different way, in that we're going to formally, on the first and second albums, we tended to put down backing tracks and then overdub whatever the overdubs at a later stage. We're going to try working through on tracks on this one. It might not work. It might end up that we end up doing it the other way. But just to see if you can have a concentrated effort on one song. Zero in on all the possible ideas, and everyone's there.
I think sort of more so as well with the recording. We're sort of going to try and sort of suit the recording to the way we've been working, because we've always, whenever we've come out on tour, we've always brought new songs. We've probably at least a third on this that set that you've seen. It was a half, more than half, were new songs. And we always found it a little bit unsatisfactory because we get quite bored with songs and we tend to write quite a lot. So we'd always come to a point where we'd have however many songs and we'd be forced into a situation where you had to select so many and there would still be songs which would be good songs, which probably should have seen the light of day but never did. So the way we've decided to work is to sort of keep pushing the recording and keep it sort of more as a sort of on-off continual process, so that we will be doing two albums this year as opposed to one, because there will be the material, because we already have too much for the next one already. So unfortunately better things sort of continually arrive.
Right, I've got two things to look forward to this year instead of one, then. Thanks a lot.
Well, Christmas and Easter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now we made it with the punchline. All right.
Okay.
Now we can relax and be ourselves again.
Okay. Still can't have
that's a nice jacket you've got.
Yeah? If you're around tomorrow, I'll show you where I got it down. It's only there's a shop downtown. There's a load of old bits. You were just sending me up and coming tonight. Can I have a sit with your
something? Yeah, that's it. It's definitely a costume. Dun, 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 dun.